Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
And this is the Tornado, Tony Panica. Very serious tonight.
Uh-oh. And we have the psychic is with us.
How about that? I just knew we'd be a little late tonight, but I had faith.
Awesome. Well, we have the full 2 hours if we need it, but I think we're only going to need about an hour if we do this right. But we have so much to talk about. It's unbelievable. But we only have 13 seconds of action to talk about as far as the main event of the big UFC 194 from Saturday. Jose Aldo did not live up to expectations, to put it lightly. And, of course, Conor McGregor has gone from star to superstar. He's the greatest thing since sliced bread. He can walk on water. He's the next Ronda Rousey, but he's a guy. So, unbelievable stuff. But Chris Weidman also lost his belt. Rockhold had a real impressive performance. So, lots of stuff to talk about. We also had a bunch of boxing over the weekend. A whole lot of huge fights, but some stuff to talk about there, of course, too. We got a big fight announced. There's going to be some preliminary fights in between, I guess, tune-up fights that aren't being called tune-up fights. But Gennady Golovkin and who's that, Miguel Cotto, I think?
Canelo Alvarez, isn't it?
Canelo Alvarez, yes.
And it looks like they gave up the catch weight on there, because I think one of the things that was was going to possibly impede that was, the request to have Golovkin run was up at 155 or 156. And they said, no, it's going to be at 160. And, they're going to go at it. And that should be a good fight because, Canelo's got a good chin. And, he's a highly skilled fighter. He's young. And he's going up against a guy that's an absolute destroyer. It makes for a good story, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Tony, if you got the latest Spring Magazine, I'm sure you did, and, there was some talk in there about all these catch weights. Yeah, okay, well you'll notice that a lot of fans were just kind of getting tired of this whole catch weight. I mean, I don't know. What's your take on that? I mean, we're only talking 6 pounds here. And, and I'm such an old school guy that when I was a kid, there was only 8 divisions anyways,
What?
So I just, has it gone too far is my question.
You know what? I think in a way it has. Because I remember, what was the first fight that I really remember as a catchweight? I remember the one fight, and I was kind of young. I mean, not young, but I was, still preteen. And that was Sugar Ray Leonard and Donnie Lalonde. And they were fighting for 2 titles, like super middleweight and light heavyweight. But I remember Lalonde had to come down in weight or something. And I was like, well, I was rooting for Sugar Ray Leonard because he was one of my boyhood idols growing up. But I just thought that was weird. And now it's like everything. If they were going to fight for the middleweight title, which is limit of 160, but the fight's going to be at like 157 or 155. Well, wait a minute. That's not middleweight. Middleweight is 160. I mean,
right.
Back in the day, like you were talking about, there was 8 weight classes. I mean, you had a guy like Billy Conn stepping up to fight Joe Lewis, and he was barely breaking the light heavyweight weight limit.
Right.
And he wasn't asking Joe Lewis to come down to meet him at, like, closer to 175. You're moving up to challenge for that guy's title. That's his title.
Right. Exactly.
That's the thing. And I think, and you know what I think a lot of this has a product of? Is the recently retired Floyd Mayweather. Mayweather and Pacquiao became the kings of that because they were commanding so much. It got to the point where it was like, okay, I'm moving up to fight, let's say, like Oscar De La Hoya for the junior middleweight title at 150. It's like, whoa, what do you mean at 150? That's not the junior middleweight limit. The junior middleweight limit is 154. It's his title, you know?
Right.
Or it's like, okay, you know, we're going to fight for your title, but I make the weight. And that's when you dictate that much. So now it's getting to the point of, okay, you know, you have two fighters there, and I think what it finally came down to is Mayweather and Pacquiao were both the A-list on there. So to get a fight with Mayweather, to get a fight with Pacquiao, you were going to be, you know, you're basically hitting the jackpot. So you were willing to, you know, make those concessions to get that fight. You're getting a huge stage, you know, against a premier, you know, top of the line, you know, draw. And now you're going to be sharing the ring. They're going to be sharing, even if you're only getting a tenth of the purse, it's going to be a big purse. So, you know, a lot of guys were willing to make that concession. Then, now you get a guy like Canelo and Golovkin. Well, you can say, okay, Canelo's got the Mexican base, and, you know, so he could be, you know, the A side of this. No, I don't know, not really. Golovkin's become pretty marketable. He's become popular with the Mexican fans. You know, he's become an HBO attraction because of his style, because of his knockouts. You know what? Maybe Canelo's not the heads, you know, versus the tails on this equation here. So maybe he doesn't have that advantage. He doesn't have that, you got to come down to my weight class. No, we're fighting for the middleweight title. I got a piece of it. You got a piece of it. 160 is the weight. Let's go. And that's the way I think it should be. When you're challenging for a man's title, you got to fight at his weight class.
Well, it's not like we don't have enough divisions now. I mean, I remember those days when there were eight divisions, okay? And if you were a middleweight, there was no super middleweight, which I agree with having a super middleweight division. 15 pounds is a big jump, but where does it stop? I mean, if you were a middleweight then, you had to move up to 175. Fighting a guy with 175, you're after his title. And you use the example of Billy Conn at 169. Going up to fight Joe Lewis, and we had that again and again. There was no cruiserweight division back then, and we just see this constantly. And I think the fans are finally starting to just have their fill of it. And I have to agree with everything you said that money ruled that. I mean, that's the reason for maybe all these title fights and multiple champions and multiple divisions. But maybe this catchweight stuff has run its course. I mean, I hope it has. I'm just old school enough that enough's enough, you know.
Uh-huh. It's like, you know, it's like, I'm challenging you, but I'm making the rules. And unfortunately, a lot of that, you know, is going on in not exactly in a good way either.
Right.
But like I said, it has become prevalent in the last years. And Mayweather and Pacquiao were the kings of it. You know, like Pacquiao, and I have one guy, you know, he is like a Mayweather, like diehard. Oh my God, Mayweather. Roger, Floyd Jr., the best trainers in the world. No, they're not. And then, you know, Floyd. Freddie Roach, he's not a good trainer. I think Freddie Roach is a hell of a trainer, but this guy is pro Floyd, anti, Pacquiao. This is long before they ever fought. And, I mean, he was so anti-Pacquiao that he would write a prediction on every fight Pacquiao had, and he'd pick him to lose every time, mainly by KO. So when he first lost to Bradley, he lost that fight. That was a good decision. No, wait, Watson. Bradley won one round. You know, I predicted the knockout of, when he lost to Marquez. I predicted that. Okay, you got 1 out of 10. You're batting half of the Mendoza line. You're not doing very good here. Well, if you give him the Bradley upset, he's batting the Mendoza line. But he would, like, blast Pacquiao for these catchweights. Oh, he's fighting Margarito. It has to be a catchweight. He's fighting, you know, Cotto. It has to be a catchweight. Fighting, you know, so-and-so. It has to be a catchweight. This isn't fair. Like, Floyd's doing the same thing. Well, I think it's the same thing. Just because one is the guy you like and the other is the guy you don't like. That's what it is. If Floyd was still fighting, he might try to get a catchweight fight with Tyson Fury now that he beat Klitschko. to get in Fury, you know, get under 200. I'm going to challenge you for the heavyweight championship in the world, but you got to cut off both your legs and get down to 150.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both legs and an arm.
Sometimes I've wished I could temporarily sew it back on after the fight. Be cool. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about. We got also Tony's best, most favorite boxer of all time just got inducted to the Hall of Fame, Hector Camacho.
He just got inducted?
Yes. And also, that's the most popular show we have, the Sons interview, Junior.
Oh, yeah. You know, did the I know the ballots had come out for this year. Who got picked?
Hang on. Yeah, article is actually loading now, so I'll tell you. But also, I saw
the ballot when it came out a few weeks ago. Cause I remember we said something on the show about it. I was like, Rich, they were asking journalists, when are we getting ours? And you're like, yeah, I don't think they'll be inviting us.
But in similar news, Larry Holmes got his own statue recently. Did you see this?
I saw that, you know, and, you know, Larry is a very underappreciated fighter, and I'm glad that, you know, he finally buried the hatchet, you know, with the Marciano family, and, you know, he got a warm reception up in Brockton a couple of years ago, but his statue, you know, he didn't get a lot of fanfare, and that's sad, you know, because the guy was, you know, a great fighter. You know, he just had a couple problems. He came in a relatively weak era when they were, like, the titles were split. There wasn't a big name, you know, aside really from Jerry Cooney at the time, who was more media than anything. He came on the heels of Ali and Frazier. He had the great fight with Kenny Norton, but Norton was, you know, a little past his prime. But he came after that great era of fighters. And he had some, you know, memorable fights, the Ernie Chavez fight, the Jerry Cooney fight. Sadly, you know, won't be known for the Ali fight, which was a sad affair. And then he came right before the Tyson era. So he was just sandwiched in that time. And he just always had the habit of saying the wrong thing. Obviously, the Marciano statement. But even other times in his career, he just always seemed like sour grapes. And, you know, but as he got older, he mellowed a lot. And, you know, he became, you know, grandfatherly. I got a chance to meet him back about 10 years ago. And then my company was doing the pest control at his hotel and restaurant. And I actually talked to him on the phone a couple of times. And hearing that speech he gave up in Brockton, it was like, you know, the man's got a lot more personality than he's ever given credit for.
Yeah, he always had such a chip on his shoulder back in his time. And I think, and I totally agree with you on the era, because it wasn't his fault that Ali made that ill-fated comeback, that Holmes did what he had to do. He looked at the referee. You guys have all seen the films of it. Just almost begging the referee, come on, please, I don't want to do this. I don't want to hurt him. He's my idol. So we went through that, and the whole Cooney thing, that was just, there was so much else there besides boxing. So I'm not going to hold any of that stuff against him. But it just seemed like he just always had just this, like this lemon. He just bit into a lemon, you know, just where he was woke up at 2 in the morning to give an interview.
That's the best thing that's ever said it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, to his credit, he's matured out of it. But I think a lot of people, I mean, he's not in the public eye like he was then. And a lot of people still have that memory of him as just not even angry, but more bitter than angry, which is a smaller emotion. There's something kind of sad about someone that's bitter. I mean, I understand anger, but bitterness, and it just kind of seemed to have that about him. But it's the way it is.
You know what, and Tom, I wish you could have seen it like Rich and I did when he was up in Brockton a couple of years ago. When I saw that he was first there, I mean, my jaw dropped. I was like, I couldn't believe it. You know?
Uh-huh.
And when he went to his seat, and then they had all the guys sitting down, and they were announcing, you know, a lot of the fighters there one by one. So, you know, they were announcing the John Ruiz, Mickey Ward, you know, Vinny Paz. A lot of guys were getting their announcement. And they announced Larry Holmes, and he stood up. And I have a picture of Peter Marciano walking over to him and them embracing. And I was like, wow. Wow. I was like, wow. And you could see, like, where I was sitting in the bleachers, Larry's back was to me. But you could see the very bright smile on the face of Peter Marciano. And I was like, you know, and the reception that Larry got when he got announced was very warm and very genuine. And then also when he got up and gave his speech, the man got a standing ovation, and his speech was fantastic. I mean, I remember some of it, too. My dad still jokes about it. You know, he got up there, and he goes, you know, I said what I said, and I am truly sorry for that. I did not mean it. It was in the heat of the moment. And you know, believe me, I've said things in the heat of the moment, and that, you know, especially after a fight that you felt you should have won and you didn't win.
Sure.
And you got ripped off. This is the biggest prize in the world. And you got to understand something. It's like, you're a fighter, and when you're a championship-level fighter, you can beat anybody. You know, if you'd ask me if I could beat Godzilla right now, I'd say, yes, I'd beat Jesus Christ himself. You know, and he said that, and people were laughing. And I forget what else he said, but, you know, it had people laughing, and that's when he said, he goes, I'm going over to George's Cafe afterwards, and as many people want to come over, you know, we're going to have a good time, we're going to share some stories, I'll sing for you. And I didn't get to go over, but they said, you know, and people were sending me reports that he was singing into a spoon.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting because he really became friends with Cooney. I mean, and they wound up shaking hands and kind of burying the hatchet. And the animosity was very genuine. And again, I think a lot of it was built up because there were so many racial overtones to that fight, which is a sad situation. I mean, it's a boxing match, but there was so much outside stuff then, and I don't think Cooney really felt the animosity at first, but I think by fight time he really wanted to hurt Holmes, and Holmes always felt that sting. And I can look back on it now and see Larry's position, that damn it, I just got out of the Ali shadow, now I got to deal with the Great White Hope, and where's the focus on me? You know what I mean?
Just like you were saying a minute ago, he was the B level.
Yeah,
we're talking about the A level and B level. Two times in a row, this man, you know, he's the champ of the world, and he's the B level.
Yeah, exactly, and he was the champ, and it's like, to be sure, from his standpoint, he wasn't getting his just dues, because the whole Ali fight was a no-win situation for Larry, because if Ali would have been competitive, it would have been, well, you know, Holmes is at the wrong time, you know, all the rap that would have come on him, but then, you know, he has to deal with that, and that cast him in the light of the villain undeservedly, and then he gets stuck in the Cooney fight, and then after that, then here comes your Mike Tyson. So it's like, damn, how can I win? I mean, just kind of looking at it from his standpoint. So, hey, time does heal a lot, though, for sure.
Absolutely.
It does. Hector Camacho, he is being inducted with Pintor and Zapata. Doesn't give us first names.
Well, part of you pay Pintor.
Pintor, 56-15-2 was his record. He retired in 1995.
And what was the other guy's name?
Zapata from Panama City, Panama. Made his professional debut in 1977. His pro record was 43-10-1 with 15 knockouts. I don't know. These guys are just the other previous guys from Puerto Rico or North Panama. I don't know what the heck is going on with this. But they also had some non-participants selections this year. They do every year. Mark Ratner, who now works for the UFC, who's executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission for 14 years. Colonel Bob Sheraton, international television broadcaster since 1973, does a lot of boxing matches. sports columnist Jerry Eisenberg of the New York Star Ledger, and Tony's favorite judge, Harold Letterman.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's Tony's favorite judge, but yeah. He is inducted, as far as Hector, 3 years after his death. And, of course, he had a pretty impressive record. Oh, here it says, Camacho, who was shot and killed 3 years ago at the age of 50 in his native Puerto Rico, heads the class of 2016, which also includes two division champions, Lupe Pinto of Mexico and Hilario Zapata of Panama. So, there you go. That's that story. Then we've got another one here. We've got a mixed martial arts fighter dies ahead of his bout. This happened over there at 1FC. One of their bouts. Guy was cutting weight for the fight. Got severely dehydrated, went into a coma, and died.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, there's always the question of diuretics, you know, when that comes up. You always think of using diuretics, the most dangerous drug of anything. I mean, that's been accounted for more deaths in bodybuilding than all the steroids in the world. These guys won't learn.
So, that's not a good story to be talking about, but
no, it's not.
It happens, and you know, you figure that's probably the most dangerous point for a fighter before the fight is that that last few pounds that has to come off working on those. And a lot of people laugh and make fun of Gabe Rudiger there, who had to quit the Ultimate Fighter because he couldn't finish cutting weight. But
remember that story?
That you can die if you push yourself too hard trying to get to that weight for the fight.
Okay, but
I'll tell you
but
that. I was fascinating.
Okay, one at a time. Tom, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, doesn't it make sense, though, to not balloon up to 30 or 40 pounds above your fighting weight between fights? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't remember a lot of the stuff in the old days. I mean, it's always been a problem, but not like now. Oh my God, these guys are losing so much now, so quick. Unbelievable.
Yes, they are. So don't do it, folks. Be careful. Here's the full story. Chinese fighter has died after collapsing ahead of his bout at the ONE Championship mixed martial arts event in the Philippines. Guy's name was Yang Jian Beng. He was rushed to the hospital on Thursday due to, quote, severe dehydration from attempting to make weight, unquote. He's 21 years old. He was pronounced dead at San Juan de Dios Hospital in Pasay on Friday. And he died due to cardiopulmonary failure. Heart failure, basically. Same time. There's nothing more profoundly tragic and sad than when a member of the ONE Championship family, current or past, passes away, said the CEO, Victor Cui. Our thoughts and prayers are with the family and the loved ones of Yang Jianbing. We will work closely with the family and offer all support they need in any way we can during this difficult time. And even though he didn't fight, they had a moment of silence for him. Yay. He's still dead, guys. Something also should be done when guys like that are cutting weight. We heard the story, actually, on the show. I probably talked about it before, how Ken Pavia told me one time he was backstage with Rumble Johnson when he was trying to wait to make those horrible weight cuts. And he had the beef with Dana White, and Dana White threw him out of the building. And at the time, Johnson was about to pass out. He needed somebody to just hold him up. He was cutting weight so bad. And Dana White throws the only guy he has with him out of the arena. So, you know, you can wonder how this didn't happen sooner. And in other organizations where it doesn't happen more. So it's definitely something to keep your eye on. And hopefully the other organizations are keeping aware of it and figuring out that maybe we need to watch this stuff and do whatever we can to prevent it in the future by having trained personnel around when these people are cutting their weight, who can deal with all complications, and who can make sure that they're not cutting weight in a bad methods, unhealthy methods. Well, anyway, it is what it is. Another unfortunate death, and it's not a major, major, major organization like Bellator or the UFC, but ONE FC is big enough. I mean, Rich Franklin's an executive over there. It's a big company, and they're starting to get a lot of attention overseas in Asia. So it's unfortunate for them to have that kind of an incident. We also had some fights over the weekend. Boxing matches and mixed martial arts to talk about, of course. We had 3 days of fights for the UFC. And it just ended with UFC 194 on Saturday night. But it started with the Ultimate Fighter finale, I believe it was. Or was it Ultimate Fight Night 80? Which one it was. But anyway, we're going to start with the Ultimate Fighter finale. Number 22. Loads on me. Come on, load. Just about to reload it. There it is. Ultimate Fighter finale. Well, while we're waiting for the whole thing to load, the main event, of course, was Frankie Edgar versus Chad Mendes, and this one was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I would never do the stoppage. It was 2:28 of the first round. John McCarthy did a good job of figuring out what was what. But Chad Mendes had what they call a flash knockdown, and he recovered very quickly, but you have to ask, you know, would he have been able to recover if John McCarthy didn't pull Frankie off of him. Started with, I think, a hook. Chad crumpled, got folded in half like a suitcase. His nose touched his toes, basically. Hit the ground. Then he rolled away, and he got clipped with a couple punches, but he seemed like he could have continued. But by that time, John McCarthy had called off the fight because Mendes did go down. He was temporarily stunned, but it was just, you know, was he really out? They'd probably say no, but maybe he was on his way. So he didn't argue with the decision, I don't think, of John McCarthy to stop it. And, of course, Edgar's not going to argue with it.
No.
So he was at the division on the guy that Connor has to fight next for the belt.
Without a doubt. And you know, the first reaction, I hate to jump to the Connor situation because I have a lot to say about that, but, you know, you've got to think with Connor's reach advantage, Frankie's really going to have his hands full. But Frankie has such great lateral movement. I mean, he has boxing-style bobbing and weaving, and he may be able to make it interesting, and I think if he can avoid those long shots and get inside and possibly get the fight to the ground, I think the key will be his wrestling. So I have to, after Saturday night, anyone that doesn't bet on McGregor, I think I question. But I don't think it's as one-sided as it may appear. But I definitely think he, forget the immediate rematch with Aldo. And I'm jumping the gun, so let me wait till we get to Saturday night. We're still on Friday.
Right. Yes, we are. And the first fight of that night was Chris Grootschemacher beating Abner Lovarus by unanimous decision. Second fight, Gene Herrera beat our former guest Joby Sanchez by TKO, unfortunately, by punches. That was 4:28 into the second round. Mike Pierce is back, and Ari has his first loss being back against Ryan LaFlair. Also unanimous decision there. Gabriel Gonzaga got a unanimous decision over Konstantin Erokin.
Yeah, seemed that like was not a barn burner.
Yeah, in the preliminaries there were a lot of decisions. Whole fight, whole card, there was a lot of decisions. We also had Tatsuya Kawajiri beat Jason Knight by unanimous decision. Julian Arosa beat Marcin Rosek by split decision. Evan Dunham beat Joe Lozon by unanimous decision. And I think the more apt description is he owned Joe Lozon over Chris Brown. It's just unfortunate, being somebody who's seen Joe personally, not really talked to him a lot and met him or asked some questions or interviewed him, but just seeing him at a lot of events, know he takes his sport seriously, and just to see a guy just get their will taken from them like that.
Well, Joe's, you know, Joe's getting some miles on the tires. You know, he got his first big win, I believe, in 2006 when he knocked out Jens Pulver. I think that was 2006 or 2007, one of the two. But he's had a great run of it, but it's just not looking good for him now at all.
And Tony Ferguson continues his win streak. He beat Edson Barboza by brutal choke submission in the second round, 2-2-54 mark. Ryan Hall is your new Ultimate Fighter. He beat Artem Lobov, who was McGregor's boy there, by unanimous decision. And Lobov, I like his striking style in some ways, but in other ways, he gets way too cocky. And he thinks he has it all, but he proved that in this fight that
that fight was a letdown, because it seemed like he was kind of robotic and his takedown defense was non-existent. And then Hall, I really didn't watch much of the – I didn't watch hardly any of the show all season. I'm kind of just – it's kind of run its course with me. But from what I understand, Hall really had some very slick jiu-jitsu, but it seemed like he just couldn't finish anything. You know, his setups looked good, but he just could not get that explanation mark. And I don't think he picked up a lot of fans in that. The fans were very restless by then, and the boos were just a crescendo. So see how it goes next time for him.
Yeah, that one was Friday. The Thursday fight was at the Cosmopolitan, the one I was talking about last week, because it's the last Union Casino, or the last casino to hold out.
Yeah, how interesting.
Now they say, okay, we'll be Union, and then the UFC has an event there. Obviously, I think it was already scheduled there before that happened, I think. But it's kind of ironic. It's always a good place for a fight, though, and they had some good fights there on Thursday of last week, December 10th. While we were on the show, actually, they had some fights going on. But anyway, first one was Kaylin Curran beating Emily Kagan by a rear naked choke submission in the second round. Zubaira Tokhugov beat Philip Nover by a split decision. Nathan Coy by technical submission, strangle choke in the first round, 2:46 mark. Santiago Ponzinibbio beat Andreas Stahl by first round TKO, 4:25 into that one. We also had Aljamain Sterling beat Johnny Eduardo by guillotine choke submission, 4:18 into the second. Kevin Casey and Antonio Carlos Jr. was a no contest due to accidental eye poke just 11 seconds into the fight. I don't know who poked who there. Sergio Moraes beat Omari Akhmedov by TKO in the third round, 2:18 in. And we had Tim Means beat another buddy of ours, friend of the show, John Howard, by KO 21 seconds into the second round. Thiago Santos beat Elias Theodoro by unanimous decision. And a guy who's making a lot of waves in news, Sage Northcutt, just a real natural talent, beat Cody Pfister by guillotine choke submission in the second round. And then the co-main event here was Michael Chiesa beating Jim Miller by rear naked choke submission about 3 minutes into the second round. So Chiesa here looks like he's on the rise, and Jim Miller is on the decline, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was a very costly setback for Miller. That was almost, I won't say a must-win, but close to it.
And Rose Namajunas continues to prove that her record is deceiving. She stopped the Paige VanZant train on Thursday night and took out Paige in the fifth round by rear naked choke. Paige admitted herself she was just outclassed. Now my hunters look good. I mean, this is one I actually didn't see any of. But I've read a lot about it, and sounds like Namahunas really proved that she's been working on her game and has perfected it. Or is, perfecting it pretty well. Because you never quite get to perfect, right? Just try to. Anyway, that's what it is. So that does it for past events there. Let's go to upcoming stuff. I'll go to boxing first, since Tony wants to talk about something, right?
Well, I want to talk about last week. You know, we had a couple fights, some televised, some not televised. And I want to first go to the non-televised fight, because we were talking about the Hall of Fame earlier. And a future first ballot Hall of Famer, it's time to hang up the gloves, Roy Jones. You know, we had Roy on the show a couple of years ago. I think it was back in 2012. And watching the guy on HBO, the color commentary, still very sharp, speaks very clear, very coherent. So it's like, okay, this guy is, not suffering any ill effects. And it was funny because, like, the week prior, like, we had Riddick Bowe on the show, and we could barely understand a word the man said. Roy suffered a couple of brutal knockout losses. Started with the loss to Tarver back in 2004, then a brutal knockout loss to Glenn Johnson. He had some other fights in there where he was getting beat up. He had took a bad beating by Joe Calzaghe. I mean, that was a brutal beating. And then you had that was vicious. And I have the article still. I predicted that fight. I predicted Calzaghe I didn't think he'd beat him up like that. I just thought he would outwork him, like he kind of did to Bernard Hopkins. And then he went over to Russia. And I remember he had a knockout loss, and I forget the guy's name, but he did the face first flop, and I didn't like it. Because that's when I started to really get worried about him. So he takes his fight against Enzo Macronelli over the weekend in Moscow, his new home away from home. Him and Putin are boys. And he took another frightening loss. This may have been the most frightening knockout loss I've seen Roy Jones take. And the reason behind it is, if you go back and you watch it, I only caught the knockout clip, and Macronelli had him on the ropes, and he was throwing some shots, and he caught him with an uppercut, and you could see Roy, he took it bad, and he buckled from it, and Macronelli threw a shot around the ear, kind of to the temple, and Roy went again down face first. His face just bounced off the canvas. And, they gave no count. They waved it right off. And what was scary about it was when they rolled Roy on his back, his legs start involuntarily flailing.
Not good.
This guy has to stop. He has to. I mean, you had guys, like Bernard Hopkins, who's fighting. I mean, he hasn't fought since he lost to Kovalev last year. And even though he got knocked down, he really didn't take a lot of punishment in that fight.
Right.
He kind of stayed
exactly.
In the end. He got knocked down, but he didn't get hit a lot. Even his losses to Calzaghe and Jermaine Taylor. Jermaine Taylor was debatable. Calzaghe was debatable. The fight with Mickey Wright that he won. Some people thought he lost. I thought he won, but he didn't take really any punishment in that fight. Even the fight early in his career when he lost to Roy Jones, he didn't really take any punishment. So he's like, that's not a guy you're worried about. Roy Jones, you're worried about. I mean, watching that, I don't know if you guys have seen it. It was scary just watching his legs flail like that. So, Roy, I mean, your legacy and what you did in the 1990s into the 2000s is never going to be forgotten. I mean, the guy was a shining star. And sometimes I say the stars that shine the brightest maybe, don't last as long, but boy, they're bright when they shine.
Well, and then also you look at the fact that we talk about catch weights. He just leapt right over the cruiserweight division, but then maybe going back to light heavyweight wasn't a wise move in hindsight. I mean, he's never really been the same since.
No, not one bit. And kind of what's funny about that is you talk about irony. When he jumped, he went up to heavyweight in 2003, beat John Ruiz, and then he dropped down a few months later to defend his title against Antonio Tarver. And you could tell, he just didn't have the same steam. But maybe it was his time was starting to, finally fade a little bit, because that's when he started having the knockout losses right after that. But he just didn't look good against Tarver. And I thought Tarver just gave away too many of the middle rounds. But Roy escapes the decision. And then a few months later, when they go to fight again, that's when Antonio made the comment, "You got any excuses tonight?" Because Roy was talking about, having trouble with the weight. Isn't it like 2 years later that Tarver balloons up to heavyweight to film Rocky Balboa? And then he drops down the light heavyweight, and he gets beat by Hopkins. And basically the same thing was, well, the cut in the weight kind of hurt me.
Yeah.
They would have fought a rematch.
Karma,
Hopkins said,
karma. Yeah.
But yeah, it's in all honesty, in this situation, I think we all are pleading for Roy. Roy, it's time. It's time. You got your legacy, you got money. Go out there with your health.
Yeah. Well, what is the point? I mean, what's the sense of having millions if you wind up unable to complete a sentence? And I mean, and this has been played out throughout the history. I don't need to mention names, you guys, that we've seen this again and again and again and again. And it gets back to that old Max Kellerman axiom, boxing is not the kind of sport to hang around in, just to say you're hanging around. I just love that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true. This is
I understand a lot of these guys. A lot of these guys that were legitimately great. It's like, you remember how great you are, and it's like, when you see these guys doing things, it's like, I can beat that guy. That guy ain't nothing. And it's like, part of your ego gets to you. And it's like, I could still do this, and I could still, maybe make this move or do this. And it's like, no, you can't. No, you can't. And you're right. It is a sport where, the danger is real. Because, in football, okay, when you start to get a little bit older, what happens? You get cut. So you take a guy, right now that was a great player. And I'll give you an example. And I'll say somebody that's, maybe hasn't been retired that long. So you take a guy maybe like Dan Marino. Okay, Marino, he's been gone about maybe, 12, 13 years now. But just for an example, here's a perfect example for a guy playing right now, Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, is still a hell of a quarterback. And he still has he has the knowledge. And he can see these young guys out there, and he's like, man, that kid can't read a defense. Well, that kid can't, pick up the blitz. We can't, throw the deep pass, but I still can. But you know what? Manning's got shoulder problems now, and he's got neck problems now, and maybe he's not quick enough to get away from the blitz. So in his mind, I can still do this. So now, now he's hurt right now, but that's like going into the next season, and his numbers are really dwindling, and he's not, performing like he used to. Denver could let him go. And maybe another team signs him as a backup, but he doesn't play, so he's still signed to a team, and all he's doing is practicing, throwing a pass around, a little bit, but he's not really taking any hits, so he's not taking a beating. But say Denver lets him go, and nobody re-signs him. You know what? What's he going to do? He can't just go out there and, just show up and sign. I mean, you could technically go to the CFL or the whatever else they have, the Arena League, but, you know, that's not going to happen, not Peyton Manning. But, you know,
Tony,
we can't sign with a different promoter.
Speaking of football, did your Eagles enjoy beating up on the Patriots recently?
You know, I don't want to talk about that game. I'm still pissed off about it.
Sorry.
But you know, Tony, there's one giant difference here, though. Remember that in football, on a football team, it's not really the player's decision. In boxing, it is. Right? I mean, because
if
you're shot, no NFL team is going to pay you top dollars. They're just going to cut you loose for nothing. But in boxing, nobody cuts you loose. And it's awful hard for the State Athletic Commission to yank your license. And we have all these age issues. I mean, you know, if an old man wants to fight, well, there's an age discrimination situation. So...
And you know what else is going to happen? You know, so you get a guy like Roy Jones, and if he still wants to fight, and say he can't get sanctioned, you know, in certain states, you know, say he can't get sanctioned in Pennsylvania or Las Vegas or New Jersey, he could certainly go to maybe a state that doesn't really have a strong commission. That's one option.
Right.
Or he can go to Moscow.
Right. Right, exactly. There's really nothing that can be done about it. And I mean, at this point, I'm sure that he's been told time and time again. I mean, I think you'd figure it out in the gym that you know your body. And the only thing I can wonder about, who is he training with? Because this is something I was going to say for the Weidman situation, that this came up there. On that, and I know we'll get to that, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. But you got to ask yourself, is Roy training with a bunch of yes men that aren't at his level, and he's having success in the gym against lesser competition? I don't know, because you'd have to think if he's got some high level sparring partners, he'd be getting the hell beat out of him in the gym. So
you're right.
Yep. We also got some other boxing coming up this coming Friday, tomorrow night, on Spike TV. This big event. It's one of the biggest events of this weekend. There's pretty much three major cards we're going to go over. Dennis Shafikov at lightweight, 36-1-1, is going to be giving Rances Barthelemy quite a test here in the main event from the Palms Casino Resort out there in Vegas. And this is for the vacant IBF World Lightweight title. Barthelemy's been pretty good. He's had that once being pushed by Arash Usmani, who I thought beat him in that fight. And I remember that one.
And that was an outstanding job for you, Rich, getting the who'd you have on? The promoter? The matchmaker. Yeah, the promoter of the matchmaker. Outstanding work. That was timely. Man,
yeah, that was
jumping.
Crazy, too, because, you know, I got him as a guest on the show, and I don't want to, like, grind him, but I did grind him a little bit on it, and he fought for his guy, but still, it's kind of fun.
No, I think it was professional. I think every question you ask him was legit, of course.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you had to wonder. Oh, and we forgot about Travis Kaufman. I wanted to get...
I was going to talk about that next. You know... Two of our former guests, Travis Kaufman, Chris Areola. Kaufman had to fight one till the end. He gave those last three rounds away just by not doing enough. I mean, obviously he didn't do what De La Hoya did against Trinidad, but he kind of played it safe. He got outworked. He let Areola outwork him over the last three rounds. I mean, the fight could have gone either way. It was close. I know the announcers gave Kaufman in the first round, where I kind of shaded Areola a little bit. But then Kaufman, you know, we had the knockdown in there, and he had a lot of success. Just the last three rounds hurt him. You know,
it was funny because I caught the first three rounds of it, then the phone rang, and I got yanked away to go watch the UFC. So then I got back and I heard it was a very close decision. Do you think it was controversial, or do you think Areola legitimately won? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it could have gone either way, to be honest. It wasn't a fight where you're going to cry robbery. It was a close fight. And two judges had it for Areola at one point, so he did have 7-5. Of course, he lost a point when he got knocked down. And the other judge had it tipped the picks, giving Kaufman the win by 1 point on the knockdown. So, I mean, right there, you had three judges that were basically, you know, two of them were in agreement, and one of them was one round off. One round off, you know? So, I mean, obviously, I don't have the breakdown of each round by round. I mean, it could have all been across, you know, all over the place, all over the map, but, you know, I don't see that unless you see the official scorecard. But when it's that close and all three judges are that close, it's not like a fight where, you know, 114, 113, Kaufman, 118 to 110, Areola, and 119 to 109, Areola. And I was like, what the hell is that, you know?
Yeah, that's I guess. See, I didn't see the score, so I got back way late, and there was just so much else going on. But I didn't realize it was that ridiculous. Well, where does this? Where do you think this leaves Kaufman at? I mean, this was kind of a step up for him.
Well, you know what I mean. It was nationally seen against a guy that was a world title challenger and a respectable name. And he did nothing to, make himself look bad. And the fight was close, where some people thought he may have earned the decision.
There's
nothing to say that he can't, you know, position himself for a rematch. And there's nothing to say, you know, that this is, really going to hurt him in the long run.
That's kind of my feeling. Now, his dad was the promoter of that card that we were at, right?
Yes, Marshall Kaufman.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, I met him in the elevator and we talked a little bit. Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought.
So, we had that card last week, and all right, lots of other stuff. I didn't take.
Well, I just quick give a rundown of the main event, and unfortunately, I was pretty tired that night. After I saw the Kaufman fight, Kaufman Areola fight, I was starting to, really start to fade. But the main event was a good one. Omar Figueroa, good young prospect. I think he's fighting a little too high. I mean, he's a former lightweight title holder, and he's fighting another former lightweight title holder, Antonio DeMarco. And it was a good fight. Figueroa was, volume punching early. I mean, just punching like you wouldn't believe. I mean, he threw way over 1,000 punches. But fighting at 151, 15 pounds over his title weight, I think it was just a little too much for him. Because going down the stretch, he looked like he was fading a little bit. And then he started to take a little bit of punishment in there. And that's when I started to, finally fade myself. But it was a good fight. Figueroa got the win. But like I said, I think he's fighting a little too heavy right now.
All right. Well, we also have some action coming up. As I mentioned, Shafikov versus Barthelemy from the Palms Casino Resort. We've also got the co-main event there is cruiserweights Isaiah Thomas versus Murat Gassiev. Both of these guys are undefeated going through this 12-rounder. Thomas is 15-0. Gassiev is 22-0. Also, Gervonta Davis, 13-0. We're fighting Luis Sanchez, who's 17-4-1. And Brian Carlos Castano, 10-0, will be fighting Aaron Garcia, 15-4-1. Mickey Bay is on the card at lightweight. He's 21-1-1. He's fighting Name Nelson, 12-0-1. And our former guest, Tommy Renone, 24-6-1, is fighting Ishe Smith, 27-8.
Yeah. All right.
A big step up for Tommy. Let's hope it works out for him. Also, somebody's always got to go with Christopher at super welterweight, 13-0, fighting Eric Johnson, who is 11-0. And that's one of the only big fights this weekend, fight cards. There's another one over in the UK that's fairly stacked. If I can find it here. I'll add it up. Where is that card? Mm-hmm. over in the chat. Got it. Saturday in Manchester Arena. No, Lancashire, UK, we have Andy Lee in the main event versus Billy Joe Saunders for the WBO World Middleweight title. Andy is 34-2-1. Billy Joe is 22-0. And the co-main event is for the WBO World Super Welterweight title. And that's Liam Smith, 21-0-1, fighting Jimmy Kilrain Kelly, who is 16-0. So someone's always got to go. Title's gonna be on the line. So, and we've got Liam Williams also on this card, 12-0-1 versus Chris Carlslaw, who's 25-0. So super welterweight. It's for the vacant BBBFC British Super Welterweight title and the Commonwealth British Empire Super Welterweight title. Got a couple of fights for regional titles on the card. We also have WBO Intercontinental Super Featherweight title on the line between Mitchell Smith, 13-0, and George Jupp, who is 12-2. Then we go to the big card at Turning Stone Resort and Casino over there in Verona, New York. This is Oscar De La Hoya and Bob Arum card on HBO. And we've got Luis Ortiz in the main event against Bryant Jennings for the interim WBA World Heavyweight title. Luis is 23-0, Jennings 19-1.
Should be interesting, you know.
Yes, definitely. Nicholas Walters also on this card at Super Featherweight. He's 26-0, fighting Jason Sosa, who is
18-0. Jason Sosa, I mean, that kid's come on fast. I mean, I think he might be just a little too green for this fight. I've seen him fight down in South Florida a couple times. I mean, like, I know he took a fight, I think it was the weekend of, when they were doing like a big Puerto Rican card back in, I think, October, like, mid-October. And it's like, okay, and then he's taking a fight with, Nicholas Walters. I'm like, that was quick. Okay. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, we also got Joshua Claudia on the card versus Gabriel Rosato. Claudia is 39.
Really? You know what? I had heard Gabe was fighting. I wasn't sure when. I knew he was coming back. A friend of mine had posted an interview with him.
Cool. He's 21-9 there. And then we've got Unieski Gonzalez, 16-1, fighting Vyacheslav Shabransky, who is 14-0. And Jorge Melendez, 29-5-1 at middleweight, fighting Steve Martinez, who's 15-2. And way, way down on the card, we've got Yoriorkis Gamboa, 24-1, fighting Highland Williams Jr., who's 16-1-1. Actually, I think he was one of those guys who was promoted by the Snooki Promotions Company, Snooki's company there, that was her father got a rep. There's one, Doty Boy Penalosa. You ever heard of that name, Tony? 17.
Penalosa, I don't know this one in particular.
Penalosa Jr. He is 17-0, fighting TBA at the Hanover Armory in Hanover, Pennsylvania this weekend. The main event, TBA. His co-main event is heavyweights Bray Edwards versus Jamal Woods. Edwards is 10-0-1. Woods is 8-24-4. Ouch. Bad record. All right, let's see what else we got here. I think that's about it till next week. The big fights. And also, Bellator news. We've got the big Gracie versus Shamrock 3 card coming up, and we've got that full fight card now shaping up. We've got, first of all, obviously, Shamrock versus Gracie, Kimbo Slice versus Dada 5000. And then we've got a featherweight feature bout, Emmanuel Sanchez versus Daniel Pineda. Emmanuel Sanchez is 12-2, Pineda is 21-11. And we've got Melvin Gillard back in the mix, 32-15-2, fighting Mike Bronzulis, who's 18-9-1. So we'll have that all up on the blog later tonight. And then some other stuff, of course, in the mix that we didn't get to talk about tonight. But we'll have plenty of stuff next week, of course. And I am working on a guest for us. But I also do want to do...
Let me ask Chris, because you know next Thursday is Christmas Eve, right?
Oh, yes, yes. We can't do that. Can't do a show on Christmas Eve, right?
I'll be here tuned.
Yeah, yeah. So next week we're going to have off. So that will give me plenty of time to get a guest. But next week will be a perfect time, actually, since you mentioned that, to play that Hector Camacho Jr. interview as just a standalone show. I'll come on, say, hey, it's Christmas Eve. If you're listening, you know, here's our old episode of Hector Camacho, and I'll isolate just the interview piece and just say that's in honor of his dad being inducted. So there you go. But anyway, after that, we will have a guest. I'm working on somebody from boxing circles here in New England area, the defending Chris Traetti, who I talked to one of my reunion buddies about. And, of course, I did promise that I'm going to do this pronabolism report. Still have not done it, so look out for that over the coming week. I'm going to try to get a lot of stuff done tomorrow for the weekend, so you might see that. And, Tom, I did get some of the stuff you recommended, Natural Radiance, but I have not tried it yet.
Well, hopefully it'll be good. And, you know, the last thing I'll say, I'll get this about McGregor real quick. You know, the hot thing now is that movement coach, that Ido Portal, if you've seen any of the embedded things where he was having these guys balance themselves and crawl around on the ground like snakes and everything. And that seems to be the hot thing, but it comes down to a good old-fashioned right hook. A good old-fashioned lead hook, you know, that we've been doing for hundreds of years. So all these new things come around, and everyone wants to jump on them, but the basics still rule. And
before, did we?
No, we didn't. But that's kind of my take on that one. Now, this whole movement thing is intriguing, but Ido Portal does not have a DVD available on his webpage. He has no store. And right now, everyone's clamoring for it. You know, they think everyone's looking for the edge, which I don't think that's the edge, but it may be something interesting to look at. But one final thing. I know we're pressed for time, but it was brought up about Weidman and Rockhold. You look at who Rockhold trains with. And in that environment there, like he says, every day he goes in the gym, he's got to be ready for a fight because he's got Cain Velasquez and Daniel Cormier. Whereas with Weidman, the question is, who is Weidman training with that's better? And I can ask you, Tony, of the gyms that you hang out in, you don't have to tell me about Philadelphia Boxing. I mean, that's been since the time I was 7 or 8 years old. You hear about these gym wars in these Philly boxing gyms. And you've been in there with some monsters. Now, you know that if you train with someone better, you're going to improve.
That's just
the rule of the universe. I mean, if you're getting in those wars, in fact, the old Philly problem is sometimes you leave too much in the gym. But my point being, when I started back doing MMA stuff in my 50s, I was at the bottom of that food chain for sure. But I had nowhere to go but up. But it wasn't really helping the really high-level guys there. Well, is that Weidman's problem? Who you train with really can mean a lot. And if you're not being pushed, now I don't know this, but it was brought up, and I don't know, I think it's something to think about, that the level of your training partners can really help a lot.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, it can work one of two ways. You know, if you're training with really good guys, and now when you become, you know, a top level type of athlete, a top level type of fighter, you're right, you need to train with the best. Now, when you're first starting out, like when I was first starting out, I was fortunate that I trained with a lot of really good guys, but they brought me along slowly. You know, that I wasn't getting killed from the beginning, where then you develop, almost like that mentality. It's like you have a, almost like a loser's mentality. You know, you're going and you're getting your ass kicked every night, and it's just not learning.
Yeah,
anything.
The sparring partner's mentality.
You know,
yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, sparring partner syndrome, exactly. Well, you're becoming a punching bag. So, I mean, I was fortunate enough that I was brought up that then when I was in there with the really good guys, I was able to hold my own with them. And they were like, hey, there were some nights that you're right. I did not have, you know, I did not walk out of there. If it was a fight, I would have walked out of there with an L. But that's okay because, you know, if you learn something from it, it was like, okay, like all right, tonight I'm doing this and boy, the guy was hitting me with the lead right hand, the lead right hand. Well, you know what? That makes me either I got to, you know, do a shoulder roll or I got to, you know, start moving my head some more so he can't time my movements, or I got to counter with, you know, a left hook. So it's forcing me to, you know, improve my game to counter what he just did to me. You know, but anyway, if you're training like inferior competition, you're going in there and you're smacking somebody around, like, you know, every night, it's like, and you're like, you know, the big man on campus. And then when you get in there with somebody who's equal or better to you, then you don't know what to do because all you've been doing is slapping people around. And a perfect example of that was we had a guy that used to go to my gym all the time. I don't even remember his name. But he was fighting amateur, and I think they were going to turn him pro, and I do not know why to this day. I haven't seen him in 17 years at least. I said I don't even remember his name. But I remember the one time, the first time I ever saw him hitting the bag wasn't moving. And I'm like, oh, maybe he's just playing around. But he wasn't. The guy couldn't punch. The guy could not punch. And when you get in there with him, you know, his whole basically game plan was just to clinch. And it was frustrating to be in there. But he was, you know, you get in there sometimes with a guy that's really physical, that can really, like, you know, rough you up on the inside, which was part of my game. Then you have somebody in there that it's like, you feel like you're in there with a praying mantis. Long arms, no strength, no power, and I would go in there with him, and it's like I would actually regress being in there with him because I had no respect for him. Yeah. So it's like, ding, ding, I'm coming straight forward. I'm not even trying to duck anything you're throwing. I don't care. You can hit me 20 times in my one because your 20 is like getting, you know, hey, believe me, I've been kissed harder by my baby cousin than this guy would hit me. You know, and I'm like, I don't care what you do. I mean, because I have no respect for you. And then he'd get in close, and he would try to clinch, and I would just rough him up. I mean, rough him up on the inside. I mean, I'm just, you know, he would try to hold on, and I'm just shouldering him off me. And I'm like, I mean, I was basically fighting like a caveman in there. You know, just kind of like, you know, hammer punching him on the arms. You know, just because I could physically maul him. But he did not make me better. Because I didn't care about technique. I didn't care about defense.
Right, and it may have led to a few bad habits almost subconsciously because, you know, if you get away with it, sometimes that gets implanted,
yeah.
And that's the wrong message. I mean, you fight like you train, and that's like in the financial markets. You want to follow your rules. Even if you lose money, you're doing the right thing. But if you break the rules and win, you're setting yourself up for trouble down the road, and I think it's the same analogy. Yeah, good point.
You're right. Well, let's wrap up UFC 194 real quick here. Just go over the results. Court McGee beat Marcio Alexandre Jr. by unanimous decision. Nancy Medeiros beat John McDessie by split decision. We had Magomed Mustafayev beat Joe Proctor by TKO from knees and punches, about 6 seconds short of 2 minutes there into the fight. We had Leonardo Santos beat Kevin Lee by TKO, and also in the first round, 3:26.
Yeah, just knocked him senseless.
I did not see this card, actually, any of these fights. So whatever you tell me, I'll believe, Tom.
Well, yeah, Kevin Lee was the one that had talked so much trash about Sage Northcutt and how he wanted to just kick his ass, and Kevin Lee's The Second Coming, and, you know, and I Googled the guy, and he was kind of like a lay and pray guy, never really finished much, and he wasn't completely unconscious. He got back. He was trying to argue the stoppage, but, you know, when a fighter falls and his arms are wide open, not much to argue. So it was kind of interesting to see that.
And we had Warley Alves beat Colby Covington by guillotine submission in the first round, 1:26 into the fight. And we had Tony's small namesake, we should say, the Tiny Tornado. Tisha.
No, I love that name. I love that. Was it Tisha the Tiny Tornado Torres? We got four T's in there, I think. What a cool name.
And Uriah Faber looking better against Frankie Sands. Got a unanimous decision win there. He's talking about that makes him deserve the title, but I don't know. I mean, he had a good performance, but unanimous decision is a unanimous decision.
Well, I'll say this much. That's going to be one hell of a grudge fight.
Yeah.
That's going to be one hell of a grudge fight. And I think it's more on... I haven't really heard Dillashaw say a bunch of bad things, but I know Faber's really stoked for it. So I guess he took it personal with that team change. So.
And Jeremy Stevens couldn't pull out a fadeaway knee this time. So Max Holloway took it away from him and got the unanimous decision in that one. From what I saw in the after show, basically, Holloway controlled the action throughout the fight.
Oh yeah, yeah. There was no controversy. Stevens did. You know, I like that Tony phrase about Brandon Rios. Rios will come forward and do what Brandon Rios does. Well, same thing about Stevens. He fought his heart out, but it was just, you know, there was no quit in him, but he just didn't have it on this night.
And I didn't see this card, but I'm betting the Demian Maia versus Gunnar Nelson fight that Maia won by unanimous decision was probably more about technique than anything, knowing how Maia fights.
Yes. Now Gunnar showed some good submission defense, but that's all he showed. And see, he was doing... See, the whole buzzword now, I don't know if you've been on the underground, but the whole buzzword is this whole movement training. And Gunnar was doing the same thing, but it didn't really help him against Demian Maia. His takedown defense was just pretty much non-existent. Now, he was able to withstand maybe the best submission artist we have in the UFC, and he was able to defend, but there was no doubt who won that fight. I mean, it's 30-27 going away. I mean, Ray Charles could have... Stevie Wonder could have judged the fight. I mean, there was no doubt. So... And Maia looks like he's going to make one more run at it. So we'll see how he does.
Right. Well, then we also had the meat of the order. Yoel Romero versus Ronaldo Souza to determine who fights the winner of Rockhold versus Weidman if there's not an immediate rematch. And Yoel came away with a split decision here.
That one was close because the first round, Jacare was just about out of it. I mean, he somehow hung on to a vicious pounding, staggered back to his corner, and it was almost, if it would have been a regular ring, he may have went to the wrong corner. And, you know, you see that horrible situation. It's like, oh, no, if you work in the corner, that's what you don't want to see. No, over here, this way, hello. But he came back and got the second round, got the third round. The second round was pretty close. So it came down to, did you give the first round to Romero 10-8? So, again, it was one of those ones that was razor close. I had Jacare pulling it off, but I'm not going to argue about it. So it looks like Romero may be next for Weidman.
Right. For Rockhold, you mean. Rockhold beats Chris Weidman in the co-main event in the fourth round.
The problem with that, Weidman started off like a Weidman started off like a ball of fire, and I thought my prediction was that Weidman would probably be behind after the first two rounds, but Rockhold may fade later on down the road. But here, I'd overlook the fact that Rockhold had went five rounds in Strikeforce before. He was not new at this. And he Rockhold came on in the second round. And in the third round, it was fairly close. And then Weidman was rocked a bit, and he tried a wheel kick, one of those back kicks, almost like, you know, one of those Taekwondo back kicks. Well, those things are hard to do. And Weidman has no Taekwondo background. I mean, I tried that in the gym some once. I about fell down. I mean, I look like America's Funniest Videos. I mean, those things are hard. And he got mounted, and there was a lot of controversy about the fight, how Javier Mendez afterwards said the fight should have been stopped because Weidman really took a pounding. I mean, it had to be several unanswered punches, but Herb let it go. And did you know that in Nevada, the corner cannot throw in the towel?
Really?
Which is pretty, very, I didn't know that. But Mendez was not even so as much mad at Herb Dean as he was at the Nevada State Athletic Commission for not allowing Longo and Sarah to throw in the towel. I don't know if they would have, but like he said, you know your fighter better, even better than the referee. But he let it go. But Weidman was in a lot of trouble coming out for the fourth round, and he was just he just was beaten. And they finally mercifully stopped it. So that's where all the controversy came up about Weidman's training situation. So see how he comes back. This is going to be a hard one to come back from. Luke Rockhold is a bad man. His movement was great. His kicks were just brutal, just absolutely brutal. When Weidman's legs were turning all pink, just awful scene. And the main event, well, what can we say about that? The Irish eyes are smiling. I think we have a new Muhammad Ali, but I'll say this much. There should not be any controversy about this.
No.
Like after Lewiston, Maine, and the one-punch knockout of Ali and Liston, there was controversy, even though, and I know I've told you that you guys just a million times, with the Sports Illustrated picture, it settled it in my mind. But I don't think there's any controversy here. Now, Aldo did recover fairly quick, but again, when you fall on your back and your arms are wide open and you're eating a few punches on the ground, it ain't fixed. I mean, if it's fixed, you're not going to – it's not going to go that way. And it was just a straight right hand. You could say Aldo just got caught. But before the fight, Aldo was looking down. He didn't look like the same guy. And I wonder if McGregor did get into his head, as McGregor said that he did. And Aldo looked a bit drained. I don't know if it was a weight cut. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to be an immediate rematch for him. So he's going to have to work his way back. So it ought to be interesting with Frankie Edgar. A lot for us to look forward to.
Yes. And speaking of looking forward, we have UFC on Fox 17 coming up. Dos Anjos versus Cerrone. Dos Anjos is 24-7. Cerrone is 28-6.
What a big grudge fight. Yeah. Cerrone's calling him Frankenstein. Said he's going to knock the bolts out of his neck. Oh, boy, there's some bad blood there.
Junior Dos Santos also on the card versus Alistair Overeem. That's a big fight there. Kind of should be a loser-leaves-town fight, in my opinion.
I was reading an article about that today, that this fight would have been great 5 years ago, or even 3 years ago. But Dos Santos is such damaged goods after the two losses to Velasquez. And Overeem, where's the promise been, you know, after the – I won't say after the drug testing, but you got to wonder about that one, too. So, But you're right. I agree. This is kind of a must-win for both guys. And all Dos Santos can hope is he gets past it and then Verdum defends successfully against Velasquez, because I don't think there's much demand for Velasquez and Dos Santos four.
Right. So. Then we've got Nate Diaz versus Michael Johnson. Nate is 17-10. Johnson is 16-9. This is a really big test for both guys, I think, coming into this one.
Diaz is coming off a long layoff, you know, and his Achilles heel's been wrestling, so I think Nate's going to have his hands full.
And we got Randa Marcos back in action. She's 5-2 from the Ultimate Fighter Series there. hasn't had too many shots in the UFC cage. She's fighting Carolina Kowalkiewicz. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. She's 7-0. Haven't heard of her yet, but we'll see what she's like on Saturday night on Fox. We also have Miles Jury fighting Charles Oliveira. Jury is 15-1. Oliveira is 20-5. Nate Marquardt, 33-15-2, is back fighting C.B. Dalloway, who is 15-7. Surprises me they haven't fought yet, but this is the first time. Then we got Sarah Kaufman fighting Valentina Shevchenko. Kaufman is 17-3. Valentina is 11-1 there. Josh Salmon, another Ultimate Fighter vet, he's 12-2, fighting Camden McCrory, who's 13-3. Nick Vaccarni Lentz, he's 25-7-2, fighting Danny Castillo, who is 17-9. Jim Ehlers, 13-2, fighting Cole Miller, who's 21-9. Kamaru Usman, 6-1, fighting Leon Edwards, who is 10-2. Vicente Luque, who is 7-5-1, will be fighting Haider Hassan, who's 6-2, the guy from the recent Ultimate Fighter season. And then the first fight of the night will be Luis Enrique Barbosa de Oliveira, who is 8-1, fighting Francis Ngannou. That's it. We also have a World Series of Fighting event tomorrow night. Lance Palmer, 10-1, fighting Marcos Alexandre Campos de Almeida in the main event. He is 17-5, first 10-1. Ozzy Duglovgov is in the main event. He is 7-2, fighting Nick Karen Webb, who is 18-6. We got Robbie Peralta versus Shamon Da Silva Moraes. Peralta is 18-6, Moraes is 7-1. Josh Hill, 12-1, versus Bekbulat Magomedov, who's 16-0. Jake Kuhn, who is 8-4, fighting Clinton Williams, who is 7-2. Abubakar Nurmagomedov is also on the card. He is 10-1, fighting Danny Davis Jr., who is 11-9-1. Jonathan Nunes, 5-1, will be fighting David Jordan, 3-3. Hakeem Dawodo, who is 5-0, will be fighting Murat Magomedov, who is 7-0. And the first fight of the night will be Gil Guardado versus Giga Chikadze. Guardado is 4-0. Chikadze is fighting in his first MMA fight professionally. So that's about it. That's about all we can afford to spend here on this Thursday evening with you folks, because we got no more news, no more events. That's all. All
right, guys. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and all that good stuff. So I guess it'll be, 2 weeks from tonight or 3 weeks from tonight. I guess you'll let us know, Rich. Email. Remember, we got Fedor the New Year's Eve morning, so that'll be fun.
Oh, so we've got Christmas Eve, and then the next week is New Year's Eve, Thursday?
Yeah.
Yeah, and from what I understand, Fedor will be fighting New Year's Eve in Japan,
right.
which and I know it's going to be on live in the morning on Spike, but I'm not sure exactly what day or anything like that, but we'll have to watch for it. We'll see if Fedor's got one more run. And, you know, I think I mentioned he went to Putin to get permission to make his comeback. I mean, how incredible is that? I mean, can you imagine Brock Lesnar going to talk to Obama, you know? Seeing if he can get back to the UFC. That's what a fan Putin is of MMA. I mean, how cool is that? So, anyways, with that, let's enjoy the holidays, boys, and we'll check in later.
Yeah.
Safe holiday. Behave yourself.
We'll have to do some kind of recorded thing for like a little bit before New Year's Eve.
And Tuesday or Wednesday that week?
Right.
That'd be good for me.
Let me know.
You guys just let me know.
We'll
all right. Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you before the year ends. All right, guys. Over and out.
Good holiday, both of you. Later. Tornado out.
Happy tree selling, Tony.